Everybody's talking at me. I don't hear words they're saying, only the echoes of my mind. People stopping, staring. I can't see their faces, only the shadows of their eyes. I'm going where the sun keeps shining through the pouring rain. Going where the weather suits my clothes. Banking off of the northeast wind, sailing on summer breeze, and skipping over the ocean like a stone. Northeast winds sailing on summer breeze and skipping over the ocean like a
song. Okay, so we're bringing me in that way. Hopefully you are hearing me, and if you're not, it kind of sucks. I can hear myself, so hear myself through my headset. So hopefully the rest of you are hearing me. Are you hearing me now? Indy, if you're hearing me, let me know. And yes, they are. They are hearing me. But, okay, so something's up with my headset most likely. Anyway, every Wednesday, Hank Jones Polysports here on Global Patriot Radio at blogtalkradio.com. As I said, Mondays, Vito and Big Al at 6 o'clock. Tuesdays, Eric with Cross and Crescent at 6. Thursdays, Paul Sutliff at 6 with the Sutliffian Report. Fridays, Andrew Herod with Conservative Casual Friday at noon. And then, of course, Saturday nights, Minister Usama Dakduk and the Beautiful Christie from 10 p.m. to midnight with Revealing the Truth About Islam. Then Sundays, Eric's back with The Real Interfaith Dialogue. Ah, let's see. My wife and little Aussie are here in the house. Little Aussie is just adorable, as is the wife. If you want to contact the show, of course, email me, hjpsports1980@gmail.com. Or if you were to say, oh, go to Facebook and type in Hank Jones Polysports, my page would pop up. If you go to Twitter, @HPolysports. So, yeah, those are the ways you can get in. And, of course, you can always log in at blogtalkradio.com and find us in the live section. And, of course, you can also call in 319-527-6706. If you do that, you can listen and you can hit the one on your phone and talk if you would like. Yes, we listen when that happens. We talk when that happens. Hey, prayers go out, as always, for those in need. Sue from New Mexico, Annie from Southern Sense Radio, and G-Ski Rocks from the Dave and G-Ski Rocks show. Be thinking about those folks always. And in the meantime, let's get to the obituaries. Last Wednesday, we lost Ralph Tavares. Now, you know the group Tavares. He was a member of that group. He passed away last Wednesday at 79. Also that day, we lost Jamaican bassist Robbie Shakespeare of Black Uhuru. He was 68. And then Gil Bridges of Rare Earth, age 80. Those were our losses in the music and entertainment world. From the sports world, we lost Matt Shearer. He was 38 years old. He was noted as a pacemaker for, like, middle-distance events in track and field. We also lost former Buffalo Bill player Mark Pike at age 57, former Major League Baseballer Richie Lewis at 85, and former NHLer Jerry Foley at age 89. We also lost pro wrestler Blackjack Lanza. Blackjack Lanza was, what was he? I think he was 86. Yeah, he was born John Morty Lanzo in Minneapolis. He came up through Vern Gagne's old AWA, as well as the NWA's Mid-South and Mid-Atlantic promotions. Won the world title in the AWA partner group, the WWA, from Wilbur Snyder. Snyder co-owned that promotion, of course, with the legendary Dick the Bruiser. He eventually teamed with Blackjack Mulligan, also known as Robert Windham. If that does sound familiar, yes, he is connected. He is the father of Barry Windham. Barry has had a pretty successful career in his own right. The Blackjacks, as Lanza and Mulligan, were called, won the tag team titles in the WWA. Now, for those of you that watched Chicago All-Star Wrestling in the 70s, that was what you were primarily watching, was WWA. Many people thought, well, it was the old AWA promotion. Actually, it was not. It was the NWA, or the WWA, who partnered partnered talent with Vern Gagne's AWA. They eventually made it to, at that time, the pinnacle, the WWWF, which later just became the WWF and is now known as WWE. They won the tag titles from Dominic DiNucci and Pat Barrett before they moved on to Dallas to NWA's Big Time promotion. They won the NWA tag straps there. They eventually broke up in 1984. Lanza retired from active ring action in 1985. He eventually became a road agent for WWF / WWE. He was named to the Hall of Fame there in 2006. Last Thursday, kind of a busy day on the obituary front, Lena Wertmuller, noted film director. She was 93. Al Unser, former Indy winner, Indianapolis 500 winner. He was 82. Tragic loss, Demaryius Thomas, former Denver Broncos wide receiver. He's only 33. I think he may have had a seizure. He'd had some other recent health scares. Very touching thing. The Broncos went out last Sunday in their game against the Lions and did not have anyone lined up at Demaryius Thomas's old ex-receiver spot. They took a delay of game, and the Lions declined the penalty. So nice way to remember him. And then Speedy Duncan, former NFL player at 79. And then also Sunday, Slim 400. He was a rapper. Don't know much about him, but I know that he was shot and killed at age 33, and that made some news in the rap world. Last Friday, there's only one I'm going to acknowledge, Michael Nesmith. passed away of heart failure at age 78. He was a former member of the Monkees, Mike. He was a songwriter, and he produced a show on Nickelodeon back in 1980 called Pop Clips. He was sort of a pioneer of the music video format, of introducing songs and then featuring videos as well as the music. He won a Grammy in 1982 for Video of the Year for his show Elephant Parts. Now, the format of Pop Clips, it enabled songs to be shown in a story format, no doubt was a forerunner of MTV. Groups like M, Split Enz, Huey Lewis and the News. Yep, Huey Lewis and the News owed their early success to that show. It also featured his own single, Nesmith's own single, Rio. And that show was eventually sold to Time Warner, and from that, Time Warner created MTV. He was also an executive producer for the 1984 cult movie Repo Man. And to top it all off, his mother happened to be the founder of Liquid Paper, also known as Whiteout. She sold that to Gillette in 1979 for $48 million. Mike just pointed out via text that Mickey Dolenz is the only surviving member of the Monkees. Yeah, there are now more surviving Beatles than there are Monkees. Saturday, we lost Anne Rice, author of The Vampire Chronicles at age 80. And then Sunday, we lost another pro wrestler, Jimmy Rave, at age 39, complications of multiple infections. He, known drug user, he'd eventually lost several limbs to amputation. And then we also lost former Major League Baseball executive Roland Heeman at age 92. Monday, we lost R&B and soul singer Joe Simon at age 85. He pretty much toured with anybody who was everybody in the soul world. Very popular and ubiquitous artist. Then Tuesday, we lost two more music stalwarts. You may not know them by name. Ken Cragen passed away at age 85. He was a producer on We Are the World, as well as the founder of Hands Across America. That was where they held hands in solidarity for the homeless. Remember, Jay Leno came under some fire because he said, you know, I care about homeless as much as the next guy. I don't feel the need to stand in a ditch and hold hands with Robert Blake in order to prove it to everyone. And, of course, we lost Phil Chen Monday. Phil Chen was a bassist. He was age 80. He played on what many consider the definitive rock jazz fusion album, Jeff Beck's Blow by Blow. Yeah, classic rock jazz fusion album. Interestingly enough, Phil Chen himself did not get much noise, did not get much notice. He didn't play on any of Beck's other albums that I know of. He may have played, you know, spot time, but he did not play on, like, on Wired. He did not play on There and Back. And as far as other later Jeff Beck albums, I don't know, you know, I'd have to go really looking. But that album was absolutely groundbreaking in the world of jazz rock, or what many call fusion. Now, a lot of people say, well, no, what about Return to Forever? What about those were guys that had made really no noise in the rock world. Here in the case of Blow by Blow, Jeff Beck was a rock and roller, and he loved the blues as well. And he teamed up with George Martin of Beatles fame. Hawkeye Mike will, of course, know that name, George Martin, longtime Beatle producer. And he put Jeff Beck in with some, I guess you'd say, some jazz musicians, although Max Middleton had played with Beck before that, but Jan Hammer, and then, of course, Phil Chen. And they took the jazz format, the rock format, so to speak, put it in with jazz, used some orchestration in the background. Just an absolutely incredible album. Still one of my favorites of all time. So Phil Chen, gone at age 80. Actually, you know, that's the second in recent weeks, we lost bassist Rick Laird from the Mahavishnu Orchestra several weeks ago. So, wow, maybe bass players are – Michael Nesmith wasn't a bass player. He was a guitarist, so don't know. Hey, Fox News reporter brought up the Fox $500,000 Christmas tree fire in a White House briefing. Jen Psaki, of course, fumbled her way through it. But he asked whether releasing the suspect was good governing, and she, you know, she came off a little bit better than Dopey Joe, but not much. basically, Peter Doocy pointed out that the fire could have, you know, could have hurt people, could have killed people. Obvious act of arson, obvious act of aggression. And Jen Psaki just sort of waved it off. Don't know. Can't really comment. It's mind-boggling that we're seeing this stuff. You know, we've already seen the riots over the last couple of years, Portland, Minneapolis, wherever they can dream up one. They don't need much of a reason to riot. It's, you know, I guess when you don't work and you live off everyone else, rioting's a thing. But yeah, just another instance of, you know, left wingers, if you will, and Jen Psaki, no comment. Indy Hawk points out, yeah, Pelosi is looking for ideas on why crime could be increasing. You remember I talked last week, Pelosi said there's no correlation between no bail policies and the smash and grab crime we're seeing. Yeah, now Nancy Pelosi is looking for ideas on the crime increase. It's unbelievable. The gall of these people, I swear to God. This next story comes from, of all places, Reuters via Yahoo News. A New York ethics panel. Irony or what? New York and ethics. They've ordered disgraced former Governor Andrew Cuomo to return $5.1 million from the sales of his fantasy book. Remember, he wrote that fantasy book about being a hero at the beginning of the COVID-19 pandemic back in early 2020. He called it a biography or a reality. It was a fantasy. The bigger irony, it wasn't for his mishandling of the situation or the quasi-murder of thousands of elderly residents at assisted living centers that were forced to take in COVID-19 patients. No, it was because he violated an ethics rule about using state resources. Specifically, he used the resources to complete his book and get paid compensation, as well as failing to disclose how much time he would be spending on the project while utilizing state resources. In other words, it's a money grab, but for technicalities, not actual wrongdoing, including, of course, at a minimum, manslaughter. Welcome Vito to the chat room. Vito's in, along with Indy. Yeah, so, okay, by the way, what's happened to at least some of this money? Well, he donated $500,000 to charity. And, of course, he placed $1 million in a trust for his daughters. Last week, a couple tweets and other social media posts appeared, soon to be buried, of course. They detailed meetings between La Dopey Nostra and major newsrooms that were held in order to, quote, reshape, unquote, coverage of economic issues. What's more, CNN apparently ran it for a brief time. Indy points out, Vito asked Indy, is Pelosi not a putz? What a fraud. Indy says, sadly, she wasn't on Hank's obituary section. Yeah, that's one I won't be upset to report. Sorry, folks. I'm just saying it as it is. Anyway, now you can probably find the social media posts I'm talking about if you follow some of those folks that actually posted it. But no, you will not find it anywhere on CNN. And that, friends, is just one of the actual inherent evils of our big media and big tech. Yeah, it's not just that they can censor you. It's that they can censor, they can whitewash, and they can protect themselves and those with whom they share their twisted ideologies. You know, we always hear, watch what you post, because the internet is forever. Well, that's true, especially for those who take, for whatever messed up reason that resides in their heads, those that take screenshots of everything they see on the internet. But every tweet or meme that comes across a person's profile, you know, they do that. But one of those big tech who do the fact checks, even Facebook has admitted that much of those fact checks are merely opinions. Yeah, gee, thanks for that, bombshell Facebook or Meta or whatever the hell you happen to be calling yourself right now. What about, though, those outlets that actually hide stuff? You know? They hide certain items, like, oh, Hunter's laptop, or those who delay revelations of nefarious activity, like, oh, you know, Loretta Lynch and former President Bill Clinton out on the tarmac. Yeah, that wasn't going to get reported until somebody decided to break that story. and we're going to sit on it. The issue, of course, really, is how far will they go? Like, to what extent will they bend ethics versus actual breaking of the law? You know, most states have rules or laws in place regarding transparency or secret meetings that take place out of public view. So why do we never seem to see such standards applied during Democrat administrations? But they are applied during any and all communications, including offhand conversations at cocktail parties or ball games. Those are all on the table during Republican administrations. Now, look, I'm kind of lukewarm on the whole break up the monopolies talk. Look, obviously, many times the economies of scale or other advantages are good, especially in tech and infrastructure. Frankly, breaking up media companies will never guarantee ethics or transparency or unbiased coverage anyway. So what's the answer? It's obvious, of course. Break up big government. Yeah, break it up. Do away with exemptions from laws for congresspeople or other government officials. Make federal government accountable under antitrust statutes, especially as it applies to colluding with certain companies or industries. For God's sake, we need transparency so we can show our country just how people will come into Congress or government with a net worth somewhere south of what I have, which isn't much, and they end up with a net worth like, oh, in the LaJuan James neighborhood. People need to know more of that. The assumption is that everybody just comes to Congress rich and that Congress is for rich people. No. People get rich in Congress. People make their 100-some thousand a year and come out worth $20 million. Fox News, another female swimmer, yeah, female being the being objective here, or subjective, another female swimmer from the University of Pennsylvania swim team, okay, this was an actual female, has come forward, okay, has come out, okay, that's a bad choice of words, come out, correction, has stepped forward with revelations and descriptions of the environment on the team over the inclusion and performance of Leah Thomas, who just three seasons ago was swimming for the men's team as Will Thomas. Yeah, it seems Thomas has, quote, transitioned using testosterone suppression and possible surgery to get onto the women's team. Now, predictably, Thomas is destroying competitors, has set numerous school records. At one meet, though, the crowd was silent when Thomas touched the wall, but literally erupted in applause when her teammate touched the wall. Just, you know, a mere 38 seconds later. Look, here's the big problem. This isn't just about transitioning, even if it's as a teenager. This isn't a matter of never having competed. This is a matter of a swimmer who was second team all Ivy League in the 2018-19 season. Now swimming on the women's team, 21-22 season. Yeah, second team all Ivy in men's swimming. Now swimming women's. Don't give me all that crap about surgery or testosterone suppression. For love of all things normal, do not give me the truth, all that shtick about true self and gender identity or whatever. Look, on July 31st, 2019, on this very show, Steve Dace, you know, of Blaze TV, the book Fauci and Bargain, Michigan podcast, I mean, Steve Dace is pretty well known. He said it perfectly and succinctly. This is what he said. He said, it isn't about equity, equality, or rights. What it is a mental disease. Now, look, the absurdities are numerous. To wit, we can't usually know if one has transitioned via surgery or hormones or anything specific. Why? Excite medical privacy, of course. Yeah, medical privacy. By the way, vaccination status, your medical privacy isn't worth crap. But for someone who may or may not have had it lopped off, so to speak, or is taking whatever. No, medical privacy is paramount. We can't complain about them setting records, which they couldn't attain as a man, given how sensitive all this is. And, of course, the absolute 20-ton woolly mammoth in the room, that being Title IX. We went through all the hoopla for Title IX back in the 1970s. Equitable competition for women. Women shouldn't have to compete with men. Men are given luxuries not afforded women. And we saw women's sports being added. And often it was at the expense of a men's sport being cut. sport of swimming itself has been cut at several colleges because of Title IX restrictions or just general budget cuts. So, yeah, to see the sport of women's swimming being abused and exploited like this is more than irony. It's an insult. It's an insult to teammates and competitors. It's an insult to athletes and coaches and staff and even schools that have had sports cut or careers cut short or lives ruined. The biggest insults, though, first, the third biggest insult. Leah Thomas, is actually bragging in post-race interviews. I kid you not, bragging. It has been bragging in post-race interviews. I call this pulling a Ron Richardson. Now, for those of you who have seen the movie Mr. Mom, Ron Richardson is the character played by Martin Mull, the owner of an ad agency where Terry Garr's character goes to work after her husband, who is played by Michael Keaton, is laid off in the Detroit auto industry, which was flagging in the early 80s. So Ron Richardson has a big party at his estate every year. One of the features of it is the Richardson Olympics. Now, before the race that year, Michael Keaton was going to do it, and the executives and the employees that compete against him sort of told him, look, this is it's sort of like an obstacle course meets the decathlon. So Keaton's character is told beforehand that you pretty much have to let Ron win because he, of course, owns the company. So after leading most of the way, Michael Keaton realizes it's his wife's career on the line, so he intentionally falls down mere yards from the finish line. Afterward, the sycophants all hoist Ron Richardson on their shoulders, and he's hoisting a large trophy cup aloft, and he's saying, literally, he's going, I did it! I really did it! That's what Leah Thomas is doing, bragging about an all but predetermined race outcome. The second biggest insult, that would be Penn coach Mike Schnurr, who is staying quiet about the whole damn thing. During team meetings about the subject, he's remaining quiet. He's not even running them. School administrators are. The school administrators are handling everything. The worst insult, other Penn swimmers, actual female swimmers, are having to speak anonymously, including conducting interviews from anonymous numbers and going off campus to talk, because they've received threats and fears of reprisals from University of Pennsylvania administration. Seriously. They're protecting a male swimmer from blowback from female swimmers on the women's swim team. Now, this isn't the first, nor is it anywhere close to the last, of the crap like this that has happened at Penn or at any Ivy League school. Remember, shortly after Charles Lieber, a Harvard doctor, was arrested for not disclosing ties to the Wuhan Institute of Technology and Virology, but Ivy League was the first league to cancel their conference basketball tournaments, their hockey tournaments, the first to cancel all spring sports. This actually was before the WHO declared COVID-19 as a pandemic. But there's an actual difference. In this case, they've gone beyond overboard. They're actually harming and possibly dismantling a team and potentially destroying a whole sport. Now, the NCAA sure as hell isn't blameless. Oh, Vito. Vito says, yeah, you know they've neutered the coach. It's actually pretty good. Now, the NCAA sure as hell isn't blameless here. They've got weak-ass rules in place with regard to testosterone suppression. They have a waiting period for converting from men's to women's status. And they basically ignore actual science, such as, like biology, genetics, bone density. Yeah, little stuff like that. They have no balls, so to speak, when they allow the progressive mafia to dictate what is and isn't right or what is and isn't fair. That they would allow medical people to dictate what constitutes gender equity in any sport is ludicrous. It's pretty damn simple. A person born male doesn't become female just because of an operation or some hormones. Sure, they can render a male less competitive against other males. But until they can change everything else, they're just cutting off a guy's junk and giving him a few suppressants or inhibitors. The kicker, if you will, the NCAA testing procedures and standards are so muddled, even a doctor can't understand them. Another example, unrelated but sort of related, since 1990, There's been exactly one NCAA football player busted for steroids. Now, do you think it means all the players are clean? Probably not. Because in addition to only 1 in 38 players being tested, that's only at bowl time. Adding to that, because it's believed that some males have naturally occurring higher testosterone levels, they only bust guys who have a ratio of 6 to 1 or more versus the normal 1 to 1 ratio. Worse, if an athlete tests at a certain level, he's given the benefit of the doubt and given a later test. Here's the kicker. Only if that level goes up or down does the athlete get presumed to be using steroids. So in other words, if you're juicing and you test at 4 to 1, you just keep juicing and hope you'll retest at 4 to 1. Hey, it's all good. This is but one of numerous explanations for why there is an appreciable groundswell of support for either reforming the NCAA, dismantling it, or having groups of Power Five schools just split from it. Here's some news we didn't need to know from the sports world. The coroner in the Henry Ruggs case, Henry Ruggs was the Las Vegas Raider defensive back who, under arrest for driving drunk, crashing, killing a woman. The coroner in the case has determined that the victim killed in the crash died as a result of burning to death. The victim, whose name was Tina Tintor, quote, died from thermal injuries due to a motor vehicle collision on November 2nd. Other significant conditions contributing to her death were inhalation of products of combustion, fractures of the nasal bones, right-sided ribs, left forearm, and chest. And then they go on to overstate the obvious. The manner of her death was accidental. Wait, actually, how is that obvious? Henry Ruggs III was drunk, and according to reports, he was driving at, quote, racetrack speeds. Now, look, maybe that's not premeditated murder, but it sure as hell is no accident that bad things happen with someone driving drunk at high speeds through high traffic areas. You know, a residential street in Las Vegas. Speed limit, 45. Henry Ruggs doing an estimated 156 miles per hour in his Corvette. Meanwhile, a witness cited in court by Ruggs' lawyer says that firefighters were slow to respond while flames consumed the vehicle where Tintor and her dog Max died. God. Henry Ruggs, take the L, take the loss, and serve the time. Seriously, they're blaming first responders? Well, you know, I guess let's give props to Henry Ruggs' attorneys for not blaming the victim for not making a greater effort to escape. I swear to God, as a general rule, lawyers have absolutely no shame. And I say that with all due respect to those that do have ethics and morals and scruples. Yes, all six of you. Elsewhere in the world of jurisprudence and general reform, one Orenthal James Simpson is now a completely free man after good behavior credits and was discharged from parole effective December 1st. Now remember, he was jailed for the Las Vegas area robbery in 2007. He was convicted in 2008. He served 9 years. Then he was on parole until this release. Now, his lawyer, Malcolm Laverne, says that Simpson still continues to fight the verdict in the civil case that stemmed from his role in the murders of his ex-wife, Nicole Brown Simpson, and her friend, waiter Ron Goldman, happened to be at her house when they were murdered and stabbed to death. Now, Simpson was acquitted in the criminal trial, of course, in 1995. Basically, the prosecution just couldn't cut it. They took a stab at it, and they failed. But in the civil trial, the sharp edge of justice prevailed. Now what? I'm thinking he resumes his quest to find the real killers. Oh, that could be a double-edged sword, I suppose. Okay, too soon? Yeah, what next, Hank? Sharon Tate and Charles Manson jokes? For the record, I was not one of those telling space shuttle jokes after the Challenger or Columbia disasters. Okay, OJ jokes, though, those are totally fair game. Hey, wonderful news on the economic front. Inflation is only 6.8%. Yeah, it's the largest year-over-year increase since June 1982. Why is that good news? Well, of course, it's not. On the other hand, meat, poultry, and fish is up 13.1%. Hotels and motels are up 25.5%. Gas is up 58.1%. used vehicle prices are up 31.4%. But hey, food in general is only up 6.1, apparel only 5, milk 4.6, and fruit and vegetables a measly 4%. And of course, right now, the bargain would seem to be buy new vehicles versus used, because that category is only up 11.1%. Now, in better news, even better news, Federal Reserve Chairman Jerome Powell told a Senate Banking Committee that with regard to inflation, policymakers should scrap the term transitory. Know what? We should scrap most of these policymakers. We should scrap the machine that allows this to happen, including the machinery of COVID. Look, all this is a direct result of allowing COVID restrictions and lockdowns, coupled with relief packages, which we couldn't support or sustain, and economic shutdowns that we have allowed to continue with lame excuses like blaming supply chain crises and shortages. The fraudulent election of Dopey Joe, followed by executive orders and policies that destroyed domestic oil production, mandatory vaccines, mandatory wage increases, all during a government and progressive-created economic crisis. Yeah, it's criminal. It's absolutely criminal. Now, then look, there are ways to mitigate. I'll go over those some of those next week on my last show, or 2 weeks from now on my last show of the year, December 29th. Yeah, I'm not going to do it right before Christmas. I'll ask some folks on. We'll talk about some ways you can mitigate this kind of stuff. Trade-offs you can make, legitimate trade-offs, cost-cutting measures or whatever, or alternatives. In the meantime, it's time to go to a break, and then we'll come back with our college football forum and follies. I don't see Brother Tommy in here, so he may not be on. I don't see T. Bodie's number, but I do see Indy in the house and Hawkeye Mike, so yeah, they'll be chiming in with some football stuff after this quick break. And that, of course, the Sal Soul Orchestra with Merry Christmas All. Mike Yon.
I'm here, Hank.
Indy, you're in?
I'm here, Hank. How you doing?
Okay, good. Don't know where Brother Tommy is, T-Boney, and we know he's probably driving back. T-Boney, folks, was in Iowa City, believe it or not, today. He was not there for National Signing Day, but quickly, guys, last week Brother Tommy was the only one to pick Navy over Army. Can you believe that? Not only did Navy pull it off, they preserved a small lead. If you guys saw that fake punt, that was awesome. And actually,
thank God he's not on the call.
Yeah, I know, exactly. Between that and Michigan, we would not hear the end of it. But, yeah, Army did have a 100-yard passer, though. Nobody rushed for 100, and we all got Bryce Young right as the Heisman winner. Was anybody shocked by that? No. He also won the Maxwell and the Davey O'Brien. Kenneth Walker won the Doak Walker and the Walter Camp. Jordan Davis of Georgia won the Outland and the Bednarik. And Aiden Hutchinson won the Lombardi, the Ted Hendricks, and the Lot. Otherwise, everyone else just single winners, but those guys were multiple winners. So did anybody shy? Mike, you picked Army first. What did you think? I mean, what happened?
I was just going to percentage, you know, then maybe this, you know, like, you know, Tom picking Navy and then picking Michigan. Maybe that's just characteristic of the year. It's like you needed to go the unconventional route because there was just a lot of weird stuff going on. But who would have picked? Did anybody pick Alabama to beat Georgia among us?
No.
I mean,
we all went with Bama.
Surprised. Yeah. Yeah.
We all went with Bama.
It's just been that kind of year. Army was 8-3, Navy was 3-8. It just looked to me like, Army's, I think they're still heading to a bowl somewhere.
Yeah, they are.
But, it just shows you, though, I think on a rivalry game, it's like that one, it's a real intangible as to what's going to happen because, you throw everything out, you know, basically.
Sure.
And I watched some of that game, and Navy really deserved to win. They look like the better team to me. And very unusual game, by the way. They both play kind of a Veer type, stuff you used to see back in the 70s type.
No doubt.
It can be effective still.
Yeah. Andy, did you see any of it?
Yeah, I watched it. I agree with what Hawkeye Mike said. It's like, you know, running the single wing or the deep or offense is, but it's a pretty cool event. I was glad I watched it because it just kind of puts everything in perspective, you know.
Oh, absolutely. Now, when you saw that fake punt,
yeah.
Did it conjure up nightmares from 2010, Iowa, Wisconsin?
I have nightmares all the time, but. I'm a Hawk fan.
I still haven't gotten over that one. Yeah.
that one, there are people on all the message boards that still say that changed the fortunes of all Iowa sports. Now, I don't personally believe that, but, you know, that was – but, yeah, even when teams are punting against Iowa now, even when they have every reason not to fake it, I still worry about it. I still worry about a fake against us. I really do. It's traumatic. Here's some good some transfer news. Michael Penix, I shouldn't say good news. He's transferring to Washington. Keaton Slovis. What do you think of that, Indy?
I think we ought to be making calls to him.
Absolutely.
I was taking a sip of my coffee.
By the way, and maybe you guys can shed some light on this. What caused that? I mean, is there someone better at Southern Cal at quarterback?
I think he just figures that Lincoln Riley's going to bring his own people, run it his own way. I don't know that USC runs anything that vastly different than Oklahoma's offense. I don't know. What do you think, Indy? I mean, can you figure it out? I mean, was there anybody that was slated to take his spot?
I don't know. I thought I read something about a freshman playing, but, you know, Iowa's got to get better at the transfer portal. I know that. We got Kronk, the kid from Indiana. He played his fifth year at Iowa. We got great success out of him. There was another kid that came over, but you can go to 247 Sports, and look at they got a section for transfer portal, and we are The universe vibe was getting killed. We lose guys, but we don't get many guys. So we got to figure that out.
Yeah, I mean, we got Coy Cronk, and then we got that Heflin who played a year, and we got Van Valkenburg, mm-hmm. who was made a big difference maker this year. We got that guy, Ron Caluzzi, but that wasn't technically transfer portal. That was the old grad transfer thing, where he came in as a fifth-year senior who graduated and then, found a
program. And don't forget Oliver Martin either.
Yeah.
Is he in the transfer portal again or no?
Yeah,
I don't know.
He's been there for 4 years.
I mean, he's just jumping teams,
but
like it's
– You know, to get to Indy Hawks' point, I don't understand – and this is what I never get about Ferentz, the last 23 years. I can't figure out his thought process on things, because why aren't we looking for some, snatch up some quarterbacks in the portal? I mean, Slovis, but I think there was somebody, I can't remember the name now.
Spencer Rattler.
I don't know whether I can sort of understand Spencer Rattler. I'm not sure would fit into the Iowa system. Maybe that says something about the Iowa system. I don't know, but Rattler never. I mean, he got supplanted at Oklahoma because he just wasn't as good as the guy that came in.
Yeah,
but I think somebody like Slovis, kid out of LSU that went into the portal. Why are we looking into that? I don't get it.
I would go start with this, though, Mike. For all his faults, I think Kirk Ferentz is loyal. Vito points out in the chat room, is it a fear, do you want to do a bunch of one and done? I mean, look, there are schools that are doing that. They're doing one and done year after year. That's gonna come back to bite some of them, of course. I think it would hurt recruiting, if you were just going into the portal every year. What's a five-star? We did get a five-star out of the state of Iowa this year. Would he be thinking about that if we were combing the portal every year for defensive backs or whatever? I think that's a legitimate concern. That would be my
guess.
That's a fair point. But I'm not talking about doing that on a constant basis. I'm just talking about we've got kind of an extraordinary situation this year. I think both our starting quarterbacks this year are just worn up to snuff, and it's kind of an unusual situation, that's I'm just saying that it doesn't look like we're even considering looking into the portal for anybody.
What were you saying, Andy? Starting to say something.
We got three recruits today, and a couple of them were talking about stability, and I'm like, you understand that, but you also got Kirk Ferentz. I know when Hayden left, man, we were in some slim pickings for years and recruiting dive, but we somehow are continuing. We're recruiting pretty well. We got three today.
Yeah.
I mean, this year was down, but last year was one of our best, one of Ferentz's best
years. When you say three today, you mean three new ones that weren't expected?
Right. There was three signed today, but that only gets us up to like number 40 per 247 Sports. But one of them, you guys ever heard of Jerry Montgomery? One of them is his son.
Yeah.
And I don't remember
his son.
Yeah.
Did Xavier sign today?
His son signed today.
Did Xavier Wampa sign today, though?
Yeah. Xavier Wampa does. Yeah. He signed.
Yeah.
He's been helping recruit.
That Carson May, we also, he came in, and then there was a new guy that was out of Iowa who was, not previously on our list. So I think,
quarterback though, that Lanega, Marco Lanez, or however.
Yeah, he's 2023, I think.
Right.
I'm sorry. You're right. You're correct on that.
Yeah, Xavier Wampus, he's working on his teammate. Katie Proctor, he's a five-star lineman, so he's really jumped in. Once he signed, I added him to Twitter, and he's jumping out to guys right and left. So I don't know how much he helped these three that signed today, but, he's all in on the program.
Yeah, which is awesome. I mean, it takes that. I mean, Deuce Hogan supposedly did that too. Jake Christensen did that. Jay Christensen did that back in 2005. I mean, it's, you know, it's important stuff, but it's, you know. Other guys in the portal, though, that Quinn Ewers has ended up at Texas. You know, he's the guy that came into Ohio State, and you know, he ended up at Texas. But look at the coaching thing. I mean, Manny Diaz was out at Miami, and now he's at Penn State as their new defensive coordinator. Mario Cristobal is now the new coach at Miami. I mean, all this movement is just, you know.
Hank, all that means for Texas is I'm going to pick them next year and still lose my picks. I can't figure it out.
Well, how about this? Jay Norvell left Nevada, and he's the new coach at Colorado State. You know, that's a former Hawkeye, and
that's
people have talked about him for as a possibility that they, you know, would like.
You want to talk some issues, though. Iowa State has been losing people into the portal. I think they did get a couple of good recruits. But, man, they've been hemorrhaging people.
And one of their top recruits, Xavier Townsend left, one of their top recruits. He decommitted. It sounds like he could be going somewhere in Florida. And if you go on Twitter, people, Iowa State fans were going after that kid. And I'm sure that's not unique to Iowa State. I'm sure Iowa people have done that too. But, man, is there something twisted about 30 and 40 and 50-year-old people going after 18-year-olds for decommitting?
Yeah,
that's just
twisted.
Bizarre. Yeah. Why is Iowa State losing players? Speculation, and maybe you guys have heard this, you're closer to Iowa than I am. Is there anything about Matt Campbell? Some people are thinking maybe he's still leaving. Any thought of that? Any more on that? Or
I don't know.
I don't think that. Yeah. Go ahead, Indy.
Yeah. Yeah, he's you look at what that guy's done. So I'm looking at his last recruiting classes, 59th, 46th, 46th, 55th, 52nd, and he's 28 right now. I don't know how many of the defections are in there, but this guy has done a phenomenal job. Obviously, that's why he's sought after, but I hope, you know, Cyclone fans realize what they have. But
I don't think it's him or the fact that he might leave that's the problem. I think it's more really didn't living up to expectations this year. But I think that if what I'm hearing had heard was true, and I've got my brother is Mr. Iowa State. And he tells, so you got to take some of the stuff he says with a grain of salt. But apparently he did turn down the Washington job, and there was also some indication that he also turned Oklahoma down. I don't know if it got very far. If they just made some initial inquiries and you let him know he wasn't interested, but so he does seem to have a commitment to Iowa State. So I don't. It's hard to know what any individual recruit, they're all different, what's going through their mind. Some of them may think, wonder if he's going to stay, but I don't think that's the issue. I think, he could be gone if he wanted to. I'm pretty sure that Washington job, he did turn out, it was like $7 million a year. Oklahoma, I don't know exactly what happened there.
Now, he said he's interested in that he would go for the Notre Dame job. He said that previously, I believe, but I might have that wrong. But offered.
Yeah, and Ohio, supposedly, he's from that area, Notre Dame, Ohio State, if that job came open. And there have been some rumors that Day might go to the NFL. I don't know if that's true or not, but could be open, I don't think it's going to happen this year, but
T. Bodie mentioned this before. I think something does have to happen. The NCAA's got to solidify some ground rules. I mean, you have coaches leaving right before their bowl games. You got players entering the transfer portal at the same time. I mean, something's going to have to give, because I think this is going to create serious issues. Look, here's something people may not think about. Think about TV and bowl contracts. Now think about it like this. You know, the Goofus Bowl, which is called, in Nowhere, North Carolina. They pick two schools that have had decent seasons. Maybe one or both have a marquee player or two. And suddenly, guess what? Like, now look at us. You know, Tyler Goodson is opting out. Now, I'm not – if that's what Tyler wants to do, good for him. You know, the window on a running back is so small anyway. I think the minute as a running back that you hear somebody say, yeah, your draft prospects are this, I think, you know, go. You know, there's, you know, what's he really going to gain by staying another year? But, you know, what's going to happen, though, when, you know, like a few years ago, Lamar Jackson was the Heisman Trophy winner, and he played in the Citrus Bowl. What happens, though, when they're yucking that up and hyping that, and then suddenly Lamar Jackson says, no, I'm not playing? You know, I think you're going to have bowl contracts and TV contracts that are going to be affected. I think, look, we probably need to get rid of some of the bowls, and expanding the playoff is probably right. But something's going to happen with more of these opt-outs. I mean, could you see it? It's not happening in the NFL.
I was going to ask you, Hank, and I'd like to hear Andy on this, too. I'm starting to think that this whole bowl system now really is becoming antiquated. I think, you know, they've been talking about expanding the playoffs. I think it's going to happen. There's been talk about it going to 12. I think we should just go to, you know, sort of NFL-like, go to 12-team playoffs and get rid of the bowls. You either make that, you're either one of those 12 that make the playoffs, or your season is done when the regular season ends. And I'm just interested to hear what you guys think, but I'm thinking that that's the way to go. And then the key thing there is if you do that, then these playoffs, you know, they matter. You can make the argument that most of these bowl games, other than it's just kind of a fun thing to do and you get an extra game, don't really matter. But the playoffs do matter, so you'd have less people hemorrhaging to go to the NFL if they're in something that really matters postseason.
Or as Vito says in the chat, use the bowls as the playoffs. I don't know. What do you think, Indy?
Well, you can use the bowls as the vehicles for them, but have the 12-team playoff and that's it. You could have the first, you know, there'd be like the top four teams get a bye. The other eight play, and they could play in four of the current bowl games. And then after that, the next week when you'd have another four games, you know, have them be four other bowls.
Yeah.
But that's it.
Yeah.
That's it.
Andy, go ahead. What's your thought?
Yeah, I think you can go to eight and use the bowls. You can keep the other ones. That's fine. It's probably neither here nor there. It's a reward for some of the smaller schools. But that first round of the college football playoff, that had an NCAA tournament first round vibe to it. It was really cool. So if they expand that to eight teams, maybe 12, like Mike's talking about, that's really good. That's really going to be a cool thing. You'd be a lot of interest. A lot at stake in the game.
I think you got to go to 16.
Every game matters.
Yeah. Yeah, but I think you got to go to 16 because 12, it applies in the NFL, yes, but in college it's kind of unique in that teams getting a bye for the first round of a playoff, you know, that's really an advantage. I mean, it means you have some guys that are missing school or tests or whatever and other guys that are having that time. I think you'd have to go to 16. And I think, you know, you can still keep some of the bowls, make them play before, you know, like December 20th. But, I mean, like, as an example, this weekend one of the bowls is the Celebration Bowl. It's an FCS bowl. That's not a bad thing. And certain schools are not bowl-worthy or are not playoff-worthy, but they certainly deserve. I mean, but if you go to 16, you're literally looking at you could have, you know, 10 teams from Power 5, just top two teams from each Power 5 conference, and then six, you know, whether it's at large or whether it's G5, you know, group of five teams or whatever. But I think then, you know, that's pretty inclusive. And nobody, you know, there are not six, five teams that are worthy of a playoff bid. There just aren't, I don't think. But there are 10 Power 5 teams that you could say that you could justify, I think, very
easily.
That might
be hard to do logistically. I'd be awesome to do 16. That'd be even better, except you're now 4 weeks, you know, crossing finals, that kind of thing.
Well, you're already doing it anyway.
Yeah, so I think to accommodate 16, and I'm not, you know, wedded to 12 or 8 or 16, but say 16. I think if you go to that route, and maybe even at 12, you probably have to look at reducing the regular season to, you know, a game or so. Because otherwise,
I think you reduce the regular season.
An NFL season. Yeah.
Yeah, but you reduce the regular season. Maybe you go to just one non-conference game. You know, and so makes, you know, you might see some conference consolidation. But you know, the only non-conference game that Iowa really needs is Iowa State. You know, the only non-conference game Oklahoma really needs is Oklahoma State, so to speak. I mean, I think, you know, it makes those rivalries a little more important. It's just, you know, and yeah, so what? You knock down the conference schedule and the regular season schedule a bit, but you could start that, you know, Thanksgiving weekend could be the start of the playoff. You know, that's already, you know, kind of some marquee games. So wait, make that the start of the playoff. And because, you know, Indy, you mentioned, you know, finals and all that. Guess what? That's already happening. I mean, players are already missing Thanksgiving with their families.
And
a kid playing in the Rose Bowl.
That's
in
Iowa.
Yeah. I mean, a kid playing in the Rose Bowl isn't having Christmas with his family. I mean, we already know that. That's been like that. So
I think you hit on a key point there, Hank, because you probably would have to start right after, you know, end of November like that, because there is still an imperative to get the college football season over by no later than the first week in January, because otherwise the NFL playoffs will just start killing you.
Yeah, and frankly, it's you know, it's just you can't make them. I mean, it's year round now. I mean, but at some point you've got to draw a hard line. And it's the same way, you know, if you want to keep some bowls, some lesser bowls, that's fine. You know, let them, but they've got to play by a certain day. They just got to be played, you know, in a certain window. December 12th, December, you know, December 20th or whatever. Vito says, does Iowa still conduct finals? Would that be tough for students? Yes, we're a real school, Vito.
Come on, yeah.
But I just think, you know, all this, it's got to, you know, they're not going far enough, the NCAA, you know. I think it's going to affect, I mean, it could affect recruiting in terms of, you know, with this transfer portal stuff and the bowl schedule, all of that, I think has got to be, I think you got to, you know, players opting out. I mean, look, like I said, I'm not upset with Tyler Goodson at all. I get it. You know, Noah Fant opted out. TJ Hawkinson didn't. Tyler is opting out. Tyler Linderbaum is not. I mean, that's a personal decision. And I just, you can't get on a guy for that part of it. But, you know,
No, I don't criticize him for that. I mean, I think that's an individual decision that you know, you got to, I mean, I certainly understand it. I'd never criticize somebody for doing it. It's just, it's kind of a shame. But
yeah,
I can sort of understand the thinking. You know, I would like to see what you guys think. Is there going to be anybody else that's going to go to the NFL that you know, obviously I think Linderbaum's gone and Goodson's gone. I mean, I've heard some talk, maybe Dane Belton, which is all the more reason why it was great to get that Nwankwo, because he can go in. I think he can play as a freshman, and we may not have Belton, and that guy, you know, would be a tough loss. He's been a mainstay for the last couple of years, and I'm speculating on that.
He plays that cash position, which is a hybrid linebacker, safety, D-back. And that's what they talked about. They talked about Wamka can play just about anywhere he wants. So he's pretty big, got a good frame. He'll get to probably 220 at Iowa. So,
yeah. Now, you guys, you've probably heard that Kirk Ferentz made an appeal to Hawkeye fans for that fundraiser to aid the tornado victims in Kentucky, which is, you know, look, Kirk's a class act. Iowa itself has done stuff like this. Anybody remember the 1992 night game in Kinnick versus Miami, Florida? Were you there, Indy?
No, I wasn't.
Okay, now T. Bodie was, and Don's was also there. Remember, the athletic department then, they took cash donations and they took canned food donations for Hurricane Andrew. And the interesting thing about that was the following year, Iowa had some major flooding problems in 1993. Now, they had them later, but in 1993, they had some major flood issues. And Miami themselves were out of the Midwest. Miami was the largest area of donation to those flood relief. And they said, I remember them saying at the time, you know, Iowa did this for us last year at their game and we've never forgotten. So, you know, I think it speaks to the university. And I think it speaks to Kirk Ferentz and, you know, at the time, Hayden Fry, that I think, you know, as you said about the Army Navy, it reminds us that football is still just a sport, just a game. And that there's more important stuff. And so I think that's, It's important to note that, though, because, you know, unlike – and even with Tyler Goodson, you know, you look at his NIL stuff, he is still doing some of it, and he's doing it as fundraisers for the Children's Hospital. So, you know, we have to remember that even in spite of that, they're not all in for themselves. They're not just doing it at the expense of others. So, you know, I think that's kind of a, you know. And, Andy, have you been following signing day today? Are there any shockers? Any big shockers?
Other than Deion signing a number one recruit. But, yeah, Iowa actually did a nice come from behind. So Iowa's really in trouble all year.
Yeah.
Sitting at about 50th. And they signed three guys. I think they flipped a couple of them today.
And
they didn't sign them, but they committed. So they're like 40th without those.
And that's about where we usually are. Deion Sanders, he's gone 15-4 at Jackson State. He's 11-1 this year. They're in that Celebration Bowl this weekend against South Carolina State. But so he signed that kid, I forgot his first name. His last name is Hunter. And he is the first five-star recruit to ever sign with an FCS school. I mean, that's just huge, you know.
And you know, you have to wonder, you know, in 5 years, is Deion Sanders going to be at Jackson State? I think he's going to, before that even, go to some Power Five.
A lot of people are saying FSU.
He's kind of proven himself.
You know,
yep.
Would want him.
Yeah, boy,
he's going to make them a definitive dynasty. And frankly, you know what? It's great that he's bringing, you know, historically black colleges and universities and to FCS at large. He's bringing some high visibility. Man, that's fantastic. I mean, that could be, you know, a game changer. So it would, in a sense, it would be shocking, or not shocking. It would be sad if he left for Florida State or whatever. You know, I mean, this kid, he flipped this kid from Florida State, his own alma mater, the other two schools that he had the hats out there for Georgia and for Auburn. Now, I don't know. I that hat ceremony stuff, I've always been kind of I just hate it when guys do the grab a hat and pass it up and then grab a different one and all that stuff. But this kid, you know, that's a huge – now, Indy, you said in the chat room, spending that cash – can you think of? I mean, I'm not sure how Deion's doing it.
He drove to the signing ceremony in a Mercedes. So I'm just going to throw that out there.
Deion did?
No, the kid.
Did he really?
I'm just kidding.
Did he really? Oh, he did. Okay.
No. Maybe he's just got a rich uncle.
That's just rumors. This is how rumors start.
Yeah, exactly. But, yeah, if FSU fans are going to want Deion in a couple of years if he keeps this up. Either that or other schools in FCS or his HBCU schools are going to demand that he be gone. I'll tell you what, you know who's not going to uncover anything here is the NCAA.
Right.
You know they won't figure it out. So, you know, I think it's kind of cool, though, that Deion pulled this off because, you know – all we're hearing all the time is, you know, Alabama this or, you know, Auburn that, Georgia them, you know, here. And that's a huge thing for him to pull that off. I really –
Yeah, it really is.
It's, you know, it's kind of exciting to see it. I mean, it's just
– the guy's got charisma, you know. I mean, can't deny it.
Yeah. Yeah, remember – if you guys remember Noel Devine played at West Virginia? You guys remember him running back from West Virginia? Okay.
No, I do not.
He was there right after like Pat White and Steve Slayton, and Deion was sort of a kid out of Naples or near Naples, near where Deion was from, which was like I think Immokalee, Florida, and Deion sort of advised him, and people were of course throwing all kinds of stuff at him, and Deion said, look, he needs to go where he, you know, is going to be able to thrive on the academic side because he hadn't had a strong academic upbringing. And Deion said, look, this is, you know, all you people that are saying he needs the high visibility here or the power or the pressure cooker there, that's not what's going to work for him. So just don't, you know, he almost said, look, like, you know, people just stop it. Let him, you know, let him do the, you know, run the process out because he's not ready for prime time in terms of, you know, talent wise, yes, but in terms of academic background, et cetera. He just didn't, he wasn't there. And so I just think it's kind of cool that, that Deion is making these kind of noise and making these kind of, you know, making these kinds of splashes and these kind of moves. I just think it's,
yeah, it is.
So, Okay. You guys ready to go through the bowls that we got coming up this week? We're not going to do them all. We're just going to do the ones that are coming up this week.
Sure.
I'm ready.
Okay. Okay. The Bahamas Bowl, which has Middle Tennessee State against Toledo. Mike, who's your thought? Who's your pick there?
Well, I'm not going to tell you I'm real steeped in either one, but I think if I recall, well, I think Toledo has some talent. So I'm gonna go with Toledo. I don't know what the spread is or if there's a.
I didn't pick any of that stuff up. So.
But I'm going
with
Toledo.
How about you?
I'm going to Toledo Mud Hens on this, and let me explain. The Toledo Mud Hens were a AAA farm club for the Minnesota Twins for many years, so that's why I'm going with them.
Oh, that's right. You're a big Twins guy. Forgot all about that. Exactly. So, okay, the next one is the Cure Bowl. It's actually called the Tail Greeter Cure Bowl. I don't know why, but Northern Illinois, the MAC champion, against Coastal Carolina, one of last year's darlings. Indy, we'll start you. Who are you going with there?
I'm tempted to go Northern Illinois, but I'm going Coastal Carolina on this one.
Okay. Mike, how about you?
Yeah, this is a good matchup. I think they're both pretty good, but I do give the edge to Coastal Carolina. Also, I'm going to go with them. But this is a real pick 'em, I think.
Yeah. Oh, I went Middle Tennessee in the first one against you guys. But this one I'm going with Northern Illinois, mainly because I grew up about 30 miles from there. And so I'm sure they're not even that good, but I'll go with them.
They're pretty good.
Yeah, they're usually good, but they, you know, they
Iowa
made a
– one year, I think.
Yeah, and the year before that they had gone to the – I don't remember which bowl, but they had gone to a BCS bowl. And lost, I forgot to whom, but they lost in it. But, you know, maybe it was Florida State. But so they made it. Mm-hmm. You know, what the heck. Next up, the Boca Raton Bowl, Western Kentucky and Appalachian State. Mike, who are you going with?
I always think of Appalachian State as with that upset over Michigan back in 2007,
yeah.
The only time I think they've ever – because I don't think it's happened since they've lost to a Division II or whatever they are, FCS. But as I recall, Western Kentucky's pretty tough, and I think Western Kentucky's going to win this.
Okay, Indy, how about you?
Was Appalachian State the crazy ending to the game, or was that a different team with the eight laterals?
No, against Michigan are you talking about, or just –
against anybody. I can't remember who that was, where they went into the band at the end.
That was Cal and Stanford.
There you go. Okay. I'm way off.
Weren't they the school that beat, and I could be wrong on this, UTSA, that gave them their loss?
They were indeed, yes. Pretty sure they were the ones that beat them.
Okay.
So, Indy, does that change your thoughts?
I'm going to go App State.
Okay, I'm going to join Mike in going with Western Kentucky just because I think, I don't know, because it's not Appalachian State. And I just don't, I just am not sure. So. okay, the Celebration Bowl, as I talked about, South Carolina State, and who is the MEAC champion, and Jackson State, who is the SWAC champion. Indy, who you got?
Jackson State's Deion, right?
Yep.
I'm going Deion.
Yeah, okay. Mike?
Yeah, I can't go against Deion. I think he's got them humming. I'm going Jackson State.
Yeah, I got to agree there. Jackson State is just Deion's making some magic there.
If you could just not say the names of some of these bowls, that'd make them sound a lot more important.
Yeah, you're right. But this next one is very important. The New Mexico Bowl pitting UTEP against Fresno State. Mike, we'll start with you.
You know, Fresno State has had a pretty darn good season. I think they're pretty good. I think Fresno State's going to win this one over UTEP.
Okay. Indy.
Fresno.
I don't think there's any doubt. I'm not sure. I assume there's a reason that UTEP made a bowl, but it just escapes me.
And Fresno State, if I recall, is the only team that beat San Diego State this year.
Yeah, it is the only team that you're right. And then now up next, the Independence Bowl, and I don't know what the new name for it is. It's still the Independence Bowl, but it's like the – it's not the Poulan Weed Eater, but it's – again, it's the – you know, it's the Sonic Drive-In Shake of the Week Independence Bowl. UAB, Alabama, Birmingham against BYU, Indy. You, up to you.
I'm going BYU. All the quarterbacks?
Yeah.
Come on. Absolutely.
Yeah, exactly. Mike, how about you?
Is that still true?
Yeah, I got to go with BYU. I don't know too much about UAB, but BYU's, they had a decent year this year. I think they'll win.
Yeah, I agree. I think they lost their last game. I don't know to whom. But up next, the Lending Tree Liberty Bowl. Eastern Michigan against Liberty. I think that's pretty, you know. Indy, your call on this one first.
I'm going Liberty all the way. I've got a couple in my Bible study that both went to Liberty, so I'm all in.
Oh, no, you're all away. And then, Mike, how about you?
Well, Liberty, sure, they had a kind of a Cinderella season,
and
they had a big game with Coastal Carolina. I think they lost. Coastal Carolina beat them. But they had a pretty good year. But I think Eastern Michigan had kind of a, you know, solid year. And I think the MAC is an understated conference. They have some good quality players and some tough teams. So I'm going to go Eastern Michigan on this one.
Okay. I'm torn between the Liberty in their year they had last year and Hugh Freeze, I think, is their coach. I'm torn between that and – former Hawkeye Tyler Wiegers with the year he spent at Eastern Michigan. That was just so it's too tough to call. But I'm going to have to go Liberty on this one just because of, you know, they had the big year last year. Next up, Mike, you get to start this one off. Probably your favorite late night talk show host, Jimmy Kimmel, the Kimmel LA Bowl, Los Angeles Bowl, Utah State and Oregon State.
Oh, man. Well, you know, they're both kind of little brother to to Utah and Oregon respectively, but they're not bad teams either one. This one's a real pick 'em to me. I'm going to go with I'll give the Pac-12 a salute here, and I'm going to pick Oregon State.
Okay, Indy,
Utah State's not a bad team though at all.
No, exactly.
Yeah,
they're not.
I'm gonna go Oregon State. Interestingly, that was Spencer Petras' final two were Oregon State and Iowa. In fact, I think he might have flipped.
He flipped when they had a coaching change, if I remember correctly.
That's it.
So,
yep.
Yeah. So I'm gonna go Utah State just to be contrarian. But isn't it ironic that Utah and Oregon played in the Pac-12 championship and they actually played twice this year? And here we have Utah State and Oregon State. So, yeah. Next up, Mike, you'll start us the New Orleans Bowl, Louisiana and Marshall.
Louisiana, of course, you remember last year, and they pulled the upset and pretty much just beat the crap out of Iowa State in that first game of the year, back during the COVID season. And they've had a pretty good year, and I'm not as up on Marshall, so I'm going Louisiana.
Indy?
Louisiana.
Yeah, I got to agree. Marshall's a long way from Byron Leftwich and Randy Moss. That's for dang sure. Okay, Indy, you'll start us off on this one. The Myrtle Beach Bowl featuring Old Dominion versus Tulsa.
I'll go Tulsa.
Okay, Mike?
Well, you know, I'm a University of Tulsa law grad, so spent 3 years down there. So,
I did not know that.
I did, yeah. And the old Skelly Stadium there, I went to a few games, in fact. So that's my other alma mater, so to speak. And so I've got to go with Tulsa.
Did you say you were picking Tulsa as well, Indy?
Yeah, I am now for sure. Since
okay.
Mike went,
yeah, okay, I am as well. I'm gonna go. Got to go
right.
with Tulsa. I'm going with them because any team that can beat the 1996 Iowa Hawkeyes, remember that?
Yeah.
Yep.
Guys, remember that? Oh, that was
brutal. Flashback.
Yeah, that was one where they literally flew into Tulsa the day of the game. It was hotter than a maniac. It was just brutal.
That was a good Iowa team too. They were 9-3 that year. Beat Texas Tech in that. I can't remember the bowl. The Alamo. It's called the Alamo. Anyway,
yeah, it was the Alamo. It was the Alamo.
Cedric Shaw was a real stud for him.
Yeah, our all-time leading ground game. And remember, they came in with Byron Hansbard, who had gained over 2,000 yards, and we shut him down. And Cedric Shaw just went nuts. And yeah, that was a. That was a great game. That was a great bowl game. But yeah, Tulsa beat us that year. That was, I don't know how that happened. I remember it was sort of like 1988 when we lost early to Hawaii. It was like, is this going to be that kind of year? But it ended up not being. So okay, Indy, you're going to start us off, or Mike, you're going to start us off on this one. The famous Idaho Potato Bowl, Kent State versus Wyoming.
Oh, yeah. Well, Kent State was the runner-up in the MAC. They lost the championship game to Northern Illinois.
Yep. Yep.
And I picked Kent State to win that game. They gave Iowa a pretty good game, if you recall.
They did.
The key play in that game was when they fumbled at the one-yard line when the game was right on the line. Then Iowa was able to pull away. But I haven't given up on Kent State. I'm going to stay with them.
Okay. Indy Hawk.
I'm going Wyoming.
Really? That's interesting. I mean, now Iowa has history with both of those schools. We beat Wyoming, two or three years ago? I think it was Nate Stanley's first start. Yeah, Nate Stanley's first start was against Wyoming. So, yeah. But I'm going to go with Kent State. I got to do it. And then the last one, the Frisco Bowl, UTSA. This is, by the way, a really good game. And Indy, you're going to start us off on this one. UTSA versus San Diego State.
I'm going to go San Diego State just because of Dan McGuire.
Mike, how about you?
You're right. This is a hell of a game, and I want to be sure to watch this game because these are two really good teams. UTSA had that. They had that one stumble against Western Kentucky, but other than that, undefeated. Same thing with San Diego State. But I'll tell you what, San Diego State was kind of ignored a little bit and went under the radar. They're a hell of a team, and I give them the edge. I'm going San Diego State also.
Okay. Well, then I'm going contrarian again. I'm going to go with the Roadrunners from San Antonio. The win over Illinois. It counts for something. They did have that loss, and as did San Diego State. But it's not a bad first week of bowl games. When you think about it,
it's a lot.
The Coastal Carolina, Northern Illinois, Western Kentucky, Appalachian State. That Celebration Bowl. The last several years, nobody's really cared about that game because it's been historically black colleges.
I hope that Jackson State game is on TV because I would like to watch. I haven't,
I'm pretty sure it's on NBC.
I'd like to see what he's got going there.
That'll be interesting.
What'll be interesting is, and I think it's on NBC this weekend. So, I think you've got that. You've got Western Kentucky. You've got Utah State, Oregon State, Marshall, Louisiana. I mean, they're just some good games. Kent, Wyoming, that's good. All those great games. So, yeah, this is not a bad week of, a bad opening week for bowl games, Next week, of course, we'll have more, In fact, we'll have a game next Wednesday night before after the show, so we'll get a chance to, So, yeah, go to ESPN.com and start looking if you guys want to, have an edge in next week's picking.
There you go.
go. You know, it'll be interesting.
Okay.
So
they got the big bowls next week.
Yeah, exactly. That's when they really start up. Okay, so last thing we're going to go into, it's Christmas season, of course, and the Christmas specials are on, you know, and whether it's a Wonderful Life or whatever. So we'll start with you, Indy Hawk. What is one Christmas show you must watch during Christmas season?
I got to watch the original Rudolph. One of the great documentaries ever done.
Mike, how about you?
Well, you know, of course, we all know Charlie Brown Christmas, so I'm not going to pick that because we all that's almost like a given, right? By the way, the show is Sunday night, and I got a DVR. I know you probably already have it in your catalog, Hank. But
absolutely,
I just came across this last week. They showed it on PBS. You know, they have those fundraiser things. And it's a 1967 Christmas show, Dean Martin and Frank Sinatra. Great stuff.
Oh, my God.
They each had their kids on. Frank Jr. was on. Tina was on. And then Dean Martin Jr. tragically died in a plane crash. They were all on singing. But they had a lot of Frank and Dean singing. Good, really good stuff.
Remember when Andy Williams used to have his Christmas special every year?
Oh yeah,
you guys remember that? And he'd come out, and I mean,
how about
it's December
too? Can't forget Bing.
Yeah, of course. But no, Andy Williams would come out in December wearing like white shoes and a white belt. He'd have like a mustard colored sport coat on. And oh, Vito, by the way, says, "Oh, Mamma Mia." Years ago, Vito and I saw Frank Sinatra. In concert.
Yeah,
in 1993, me and Vito were there. We went out to a place beforehand thinking we'd get a good Italian meal. It was not. It fell well short of our expectations. But, yeah, Frank was – I mean, yeah, he was a little slower then, you know. He made it up the stairs himself.
Hank, did you send Vito that album you had of Joe Piscopo doing Frank Sinatra singing all the contemporary hits.
I did not. But you know what I did? I got home late that night, of course, and I put on my double album, my Frank double album, you know, like all his best, and you know, just
hey,
Frank, we got some Chinese
food over here. Wonderful, marvelous.
I liked it when they did him on when Phil Hartman did him on Saturday Night Live later. And he did an episode where it was Sting from the Police was on, but he was on the show. He was playing Billy Idol, and then they had Stephen Eady. And Stephen Eady would say, "What do you think, Frank?" And he was like, "Shut up, you suck-ups." But, yeah, that Joe
Piscopo.
Yeah,
wasn't that when he said, "Hey, where do you want a piece of me?" He goes, "I got chunks of guys like you in my school."
Absolute gold. But
that
yeah, Andy Williams,
stuff,
hey, Andy Williams had that special. Rudolph, you can't go wrong, and Charlie Brown. For me, one I've got to see, movie-wise, it's A Wonderful Life. I've got to see that
every year. I play that in the background every Christmas day, just going.
And then another one, along the line of the Rudolph, do you guys remember The Little Drummer Boy? You remember that one?
Oh, yeah. Or Santa Claus is Coming to Town?
Oh, Santa Claus! Santa Claus is Coming to Town was kind of gold in that it was like 1970, and they had like that mod teacher in the town who was like, and she's singing a song, and she's like, and they're showing like flowers rotating in a, you know, a kaleidoscope circle type thing. That was hilarious. But Little Drummer Boy was actually kind of sad. Remember the kid was like, you know, his parents were killed by marauders in the desert and stuff, and he's like all bummed out walking across the desert. That one, for some reason, I always got to watch that one for some reason. And then here's one you guys probably haven't seen. It's a Hallmark one called November Christmas. Have you ever seen that one?
That's not ringing a bell.
Crickets, huh? Okay, yeah. It's Sam Elliott and John Corbett and Karen Allen. And it's about a guy. John Corbett plays a father. And you know, I forgot who plays the wife, but they're their daughter is undergoing chemo and is sick, and so he goes to Sam Elliott's little farmer's market, and he asks, "Hey, do you have any pumpkins yet?" And he's like, no, not for a while. And then he later asks, can I tag a Christmas tree here? And he's like, not for a while yet, buddy. And then he figures out with Karen Allen, he says, oh, my God, they don't know that their daughter's going to live. So he's moving up the timetable, which is exactly right. So he Sam Elliott goes out and gets a bunch of pumpkins in August and delivers them to their house. And they bring a bunch of people over to have a Halloween party for the kid. And then they, you know, in November, they decorate the whole town. And of course she lives, you know, and it's all great, but I mean, it's really a touching, you know, for a Hallmark movie, it's actually really good. I mean, I think it's,
And then there's one
expect.
other one, must watch. I like to run real quick. And that is, and there's different versions of it. And I'll tell you the one I like the best, but, Christmas Carol, of course, Scrooge.
Oh, yeah.
There's the George C. Scott one, which is not bad. But the best one is from the early 50s with this British actor named Alistair Sim.
If you get a chance to watch that.
Yep.
And that's the best one.
Walter Malton said, it's the best one. He said, it's too good to only be shown at Christmas.
Yeah. I think that's the definitive one is the Alistair Sim one, no doubt. So
you'll remember WGN always used to show that version.
Yep. As did, I think, Turner Classic Movies, although they showed multiple ones.
Yep.
But, you know. And then, of course, now one year for Christmas, my wife bought, the child and I, bought us the four-pack. It was Frosty, Rudolph, Santa Claus is Coming to Town, and Little Drummer Boy. But what it did not include, Year Without a Santa Claus. You know that one, Heat Miser and Snow Miser.
Plus, we left off the next to Charlie Brown, the next biggest animated version of related to Christmas. So we haven't even mentioned it.
What's that?
Begins with a G. Begins with a G and ends with an inch.
Oh, the Grinch! Yeah, absolutely.
That's a classic.
Anyone see the Jim Carrey movie version?
Oh yeah.
Yeah,
not as good as Boris Karloff, though.
No, of course not. Of course not. I mean, although he actually doesn't sing the song. A lot of people assume that he sang the song, but he did not. That was a guy named Thurl Ravenscroft, who I forgot what else he did. I'm going to Google him up right now because he wasn't Tony the Tiger, or maybe he was. Let's see, Thurl Ravenscroft. But he's the one who sings the song that you hear, and yeah, he was Tony the Tiger. He was the guy that sang the song that you hear on the radio right now. Like, if you know, your holiday station or whatever, that's the guy singing it. It's Thurl Ravenscroft, and he was also Tony the Tiger. So there you go. That's another one that
my wife's got me hooked on Holiday Inn.
You guys seen that?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and that's actually the movie where the song White Christmas first appears.
It is not
in White Christmas, but in fact in Holiday Inn, and that's a good movie. I actually like that movie. Fred Astaire is kind of weird, but it's a good movie nonetheless. He's no Bing Crosby, but you know who is.
But the greatest version of a Christmas classic is the Temptations version of "I'm Dreaming of a White Christmas," which of course the irony never always gets me.
Oh God! Oh, we don't talk like that. Well, yeah, we do. It's a great song.
It's a great version.
Oh, absolutely.
That's why they picked the song.
Okay, so now your definitive Christmas song, your one definitive Christmas song. Now, Vito on his show last week played Dominic the Donkey. I'm going to just go out on the record and go out on a limb. That's not my favorite Christmas song ever. I don't mind it, but not my favorite. So, Indy, what's your favorite Christmas song that you got to hear?
Man, I got a whole playlist. I'd say the classics like Silent Night.
Okay, Mike, come on, let's kick it up a notch here.
Okay, of course, Bing's version of White Christmas, but I like the Christmas Time Is Here.
Yeah, anything Charlie Brown. That's. You got to go with anything Charlie Brown, of course. But I have a couple. One, Nat King Cole's version of the Christmas song. But have you ever heard Celine Dion's version of the Christmas song?
I haven't.
It's absolutely fantastic.
No, I haven't.
The
orchestra, Nat King Cole's is great.
Yeah, Nat King Cole's is a classic, of course. But if you hear the Michael Bublé version, it's the same orchestral arrangement for Celine Dion, but I think she just handles it like unbelievable. Now, if you want to talk more rock and roll version, mine, it's always been one of my best is Paul McCartney, Wonderful Christmas Time. That one, I got to hear that one.
Yeah, that's good.
That is a good one. Okay, let's hear. We'll go with Vito's song right here. You guys, I'm sure you both have heard this.
Hey, jing-a-dee-jing, it's Dominic the donkey. Jing-a-dee-jing, the Italian Christmas donkey. La, 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 la.
Okay, I don't want to subject everyone else to that. But so you guys have heard that one?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think I have it somewhere, but I can't place it.
Yeah, I think so, but I can't place it.
They haven't been playing it on our local station. I mean, they used to. I don't know if they have this year, but I haven't been listening to it because they start, like I said, down where I am, they've started playing Christmas music the day after, I mean, like of the day after Election Day, so to speak, because they want to be able to speed up any cheating that they've done. So, you know, seriously, that's what they did last year. The day after the election, they were playing it, and I knew why. It was to create the sense of urgency that we've got to certify this election. We got to get it done now. We got to get Biden in office. And I think that was planned. I mean, some people would disagree, but I think it's a legit argument that they planned it that way. So, but that's just me. So, what are y'all doing for Christmas? Are you staying in town, or are you heading out anywhere, or?
We are heading to my daughter's. It's about 2 hours away. She just had that baby girl,
grand,
so we're heading that up there again.
Yeah, Mike, how about you?
Not traveling anywhere. I've got my mom here for Christmas, and we got a nice rib roast going. It's going to be pretty quiet, but going to have some downtime. Look forward to it.
Yeah. Oh, by the way, for all listeners out there, right now Aldi's got rib roast on sale for $6.99 a pound, which I talked about beef prices going up hugely, but Aldi's is selling rib roast for the same price they do every year, $6.99 a pound. So Aldi is not an advertiser or anything like that, but just so people know. So yeah, a good rib roast, can't beat a good rib roast.
That's quite a price. Yeah.
Yeah, it is. It's great price. So anyway, hey, well guys, thanks for being on this week. Next week I'll give everyone a break and give you guys the week off, and I'll just do a shorter version and talk some Christmas stuff. I mean, I'm not going to give you a week off. You got to come on because we got to pick that week's bowl game. But in the meantime, have a great weekend. There's nothing you really have to watch about. Hawkeyes are what? We got who do we got this weekend? Western Illinois or?
I think it's Utah State, isn't it? Saturday.
Oh, is it Utah State? Okay. I'm not sure what to think after these last three games. Especially the Iowa State game. Indy, you pointed out our defense is just atrocious. I don't know. Does anybody teach? What's your guys' thoughts on it? Is Fran McCaffrey just weak on fundamentals, do you think, or what is it? But
I don't know. It's bad, though.
Defense has always been kind of an Achilles heel, you know, about it. It's just kind of with him. But I do think that there's a lot of talent on this team. I think they needed maybe to mix the lineup up a little bit. I'd get Ulis and of course, Perkins in as starters, I think. I think those guys have a lot of mileage there. And they really got to improve. And I think they will improve, but they're going to need to get better defensively and particularly on the rebounding.
Oh, my gosh. Guess who just came, popped in the last few moments? T. Bodie, what's going on, man?
He's back.
Calling in
T. Bodie,
you want me on?
Well, you're on now. You have no choice.
We're on the road. We're in Iowa. We're ditching tornado warning sirens going off all over the state.
Really?
Yeah, I heard
they were going to have some potential there, yeah.
Yeah, they've had some problems already. One of those nights, just like Twister. So
yeah, stay safe, man, and get out of the car if you see anything.
Yeah, no kidding.
Yeah. And lay in the ditch, right?
Yeah, lay down in the ditch. That's exactly what you're supposed to do. So what? I asked Mike and Indy, so what's one Christmas show, movie, special, whatever, that you have to watch every year?
you know, I've always loved Charlie Brown stuff. I watched Frosty the Snowman, and I bet I haven't watched, my kids never watched that. I bet I hadn't seen that in 30 years the other night.
It doesn't disappoint, though, does it?
No.
Frosty being made entirely of snow was the fastest belly whapper in the world. I love that line, Jimmy Durante.
And the original Karen.
Oh, yeah, that's right, the original Karen. So, okay, how about movie or how about song? What's one song you got to hear every year at Christmas?
You know, I'm gonna defer. I heard a song played yesterday on the or 2 days ago by the Waitresses, and I'm not sure what the name of the song was. It was a Christmas song.
It's Christmas Wrappings.
Really,
it's called,
yeah,
Christmas,
it was
Wrappings.
Good.
Yeah, it's not a bad song. It's not my favorite, but it's a decent song. Christmas Wrappings. Yeah, it's sort of a rap song, and they with a sort of a punky style to it, or whatever you call the Waitresses style. So. Yeah, fair assessment.
But
that's a good choice.
Being the Springsteen fan that I am, even though I've been avoiding him for the last year and a half out of political disarray, I like Santa Claus is Coming to Town.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
I know this is going to sound kind of bigoted or whatever. I have a real problem with people like Springsteen and Barbara Streisand who, you know, knock on the right and knock on Christians and whatever, and then they sing Christmas songs because they are not of the what we would call the Christmas celebratory persuasion, if you get my drift. And so I have a problem with that. That's just me, but and it's my own failing. I get it, but yeah, I have a problem with the Springsteens and the Streisands doing Christmas songs. Again, that's just me, but you know, but. Yeah, it's not a bad version, though. I got to admit, Springsteen, you know, brought it on that one. So, anyway, so hey, guys, I've got to sign off here, but I just want to appreciate you guys being on and T. Bodie for the late call-in. Like I said, next week we'll pick that week's bowl games. T. Bodie, I'll send you the picks, and I'll send Brother Tommy the picks for you guys to send back for this week's bowl games, and you know, we'll keep the momentum going as far as predictions and. Who shows the true football knowledge?
I'm in.
So, cool. Okay. Well, guys, be safe. You especially, T. Bodie. Drive safe. Don't try to outrun anything because those things are fast. And hey, go Hawks this Saturday. And we will talk to you guys next week.
All right. Take care, guys.
Later.
Take care.
Later. Thanks, guys. We'll talk to y'all later. Okay, so those are our football, our crew calling in. Want to thank those that were here, Indy Hawk and Vito in the chat room, as was Duck Northwestern Media and Bringing It Boye. They've been showing up a lot. Want to thank them. Thank my big sister who was on listening, and Sue from New Mexico. Good to see her chiming in or listening in. As I said before, Sue is one of those that, you know, if you got an extra prayer that you're thinking about, she's had some couple tough things in the last few months, so be thinking of her. Sue, we are thinking of you. And, of course, tune in next week. We'll talk more football. I'll talk a little bit of pre-Christmas stuff. I might even play another couple extra Christmas tunes or so, which might include Charlie Brown, by the way, because I happen to think that's one of the best Christmas albums ever put out. In the meantime, be safe. Be vigilant. Don't comply if you don't feel like complying. If you want to get vaccinated, hey, do it. I don't care. But the point is, don't comply. Don't let them tell you that, you know, my body, my choice. And then when it comes to vaccination, it's not your choice. It should always be your choice because it's always your body. So, folks, y'all have a good week. Be safe. And next week we will, as I said, be talking a little Christmas stuff, be talking a little football stuff. And, you know, like I said, you're probably going to hear some Charlie Brown music. But that's what Christmas is all about, Charlie Brown. That's what Linus said, remember. So, folks, y'all have a good week. I can't find the bye-bye thing that I usually hit. And, you know, it's not right anyway. I should play another song. So, you know what? Let's play another song. Anyway, we'll go out with you know, last week we went out with Dino, Desi, and Billy. Not a bad idea. Let's go out with them again. Have a good one, folks. Safe, everyone. Have a good night.
Bye-bye.